You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
I did get to live the dream.
I'll tell you about it sometime if you buy me a beer.
Like a glass cannon combo control aggro deck.
And wizards got better at their job.
Left myself open to a beating and properly received it.
But I do think they have some serious improvements to make.
It's a whole different nipplegate.
Sat around some large oval tables while eating bagels and sipping some coffee and said, huh.
So I adulted all day.
Oh, you brave soul. We're heading into the early parts of spring. What is about to spring forth from the tryhards? Buckle up and hope that you're tall enough to ride this ride. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Guys, we have a lot to get to this week. We'll crack open a signature spellbook, figure out some new mechanics and old returning friends of ours. Are rules necessarily in need of updates, even if they're just cosmetic? And what has dropped? We'll figure it all out in this episode of Tryhards. We get it started each week with What Are You Drinking? Matt, what are you drinking after you didn't go to Cincinnati, the home of Skyline Chili?
We have pretty much eliminated carbs from the diet, so that means that we can't drink beer. I know, it's a travesty. It is awful, let me tell you. That's the only thing I really miss is beer. Drinking coconut rum tonight, and it's pretty damn good.
Straight? Or do you have that with like ice or something?
Just a little ice. Usually I'm not a rum drinker, and I'll tell you what, this tastes like it's a mixed drink. You know, it's real rum, too, so it's none of that super flavored garbage.
I'm not down with all of the vernacular of young people today, but does that make you a basic?
It's pretty basic. I'm pretty basic.
So, Brian, what are you drinking this week? Please, save us.
Yes, thankfully, Tibbetts can come to the rescue. I am drinking a Lagunitas IPA, one of the best things that has come out of Petaluma, California, and now not too many hours away in Chicago, Illinois, is where they're actually brewing most of the IPAs that people enjoy around the country. Quite the large facility, I will say, just west of the United Center in Chicago. If you're ever up there, take the tour. It's a ball. So Lagunitas on this beautiful Monday evening in Galesburg.
Even though it says we've crossed the spring equinox, the weather here has been more reminiscent of November than it has been of an early spring day. So I reached way into the back of the fridge and got out a couple of Bell's Porters that were rolling around in the back. So those will keep me warm as we get on with this episode 94 of Tryhards this evening. Guys, what magic did you play this week? I was all set to head to the LGS for Modern on Friday night, but unfortunately, there was a death in the family, so we spent Friday night at the visitation and then Saturday at the funeral. Brian, did you get to play any magic this week?
Some guys from Galesburg and I, we had the choice of going down to the local shop and playing free Modern that they were giving out just tokens for, or it was head down to Titan Games in Peoria and draft M25. So we chose the latter, piled in the car and headed on down there on Friday night in the terrible, terrible weather that was buffeting West Central Illinois. But we had a ball. 2 8-man pods fired. It was a lot of fun, I have to say. I was pleasantly surprised after Hurley's report last week. I was not looking as forward to it as I thought I would be, but I was pleasantly surprised at the cards that I opened and at the cards that kept coming around to me. And so I was able to put together a pretty decent deck. Pack one, pick one, guys. I was staring at Master of the Wild Hunt. So anytime that you can open a mythic in your opening pack, I think that was a pretty good build around. And green just seemed to be open the rest of the night for me anyway. And so I was kind of putting together kind of a green deck that waffled somewhere in between aggro and mid-range, just because some of the smaller cards and my ramp spells did kind of dry up. But I ended up with kind of a mid-rangey green-white. I pulled an Ella Damry's Call and a Protean Hulk, along with a bunch of white flyers in the 2 and 3 spot. Kind of finished it all up with an Elvish Piper, which was one of the later picks, and I was like, okay, sure. So I did get to live the dream of Elvish Pipering in a Protean Hulk. In the end, I went 1 and 2. I got tokened out round one, completely destroyed my fellow Galesburg mate, Nash. Got there in game one on kind of a tough game. Game two, I went turn 1, Savannah Lions, turn 2, Watch Wolf, turn three Watch Wolf, and he just scooped. Round three, he got game one, I got game two. And then game three, he played a turn two Nozomi Cutthroat, a turn three Nozomi Cutthroat, and a turn four Nozomi Cutthroat. And I'm just looking at the guy going, seriously? You know, so he just beat me down for six every turn after that, and I didn't really have an answer. So that's the way that one ended. But it was really good. Got a lot of value. The Master of the Wild Hunt was obviously a good card. Elidamri's Call was a good card. Had a foil regrowth, which is like a $7 or $8 card. And then my final pack, I had Imperial Recruiter staring me in the face. So I just grabbed that guy just because of value. So, yeah, overall, it was a really fun night. Headed out to Sullivan's Pub afterward. And Dan Crawford, the owner of Titan Games, sat down with us for a good hour afterward and was just asking us about the Magic scene in Galesburg and, you know, how the shop's going and what's going on, who's running and what's the player base like. And so we're just all sitting there drinking beers, just telling him, Dan, buy the shop.
I was just going to say, do you think that's in his mind?
I think he's actually thinking about it, but I wasn't aware. Titan has three locations.
Yeah.
They have a shop, Champaign, Springfield, and Peoria. So I don't know how thin he wants to run himself because he's one of three partners. He's the only one with like a real day job of running the shop. The other two are just kind of the money. Don't make any big business decisions. They leave that up to Dan. So it was great talking to him. And he was a little distracted because he was getting up in 4 or 5 hours after to drive to Cincinnati because he was going to do a lot of vending and buying and things like that.
Dan Crawford, one of the great guys in Magic. If you've played at an SCG or a GP around the Midwest, he has crushed you in limited, probably in a side event. Because he doesn't always take time away from vending to play in the main events at those. But he is one of the limited masters when he sits down to actually get it done. I've bought and sold from him. Great guy. Always have the interest of the community at heart. And I have one of my favorite playmats signed by the artist, courtesy of Dan. So I'll always remember that. Matt, what Magic did you get to play this week? And why'd you end up canceling your trip to the Queen City?
So my one friend that's semi-casual, he's like, hey, I'm free tonight. You want to go draft? And I was like, sure. I'm like, all they're doing is 25. I'm like, which I don't really want to do. And he's like, yeah, I don't want to spend the money. So we went to the other shop to draft and only like two other people showed up. So we actually just sat around, played other card games. Saturday, I was planning on going Saturday. Everyone kind of backed out on me. Nobody was going. And to be honest, I was just mentally drained from the week. So Saturday, I kind of putzed around the house in the morning and I was out running errands. My errands took a whole hell of a lot longer than they, you know, they like they always do. One of my friends Sunday said, hey, if you go tomorrow, I'll go. And I was like, all right. And then when I woke up Sunday, he canceled late Saturday night. When I woke up Sunday, I'm like, you know, this house is a mess. And I actually just cleaned the house. So I adulted all day instead of actually going to play Magic.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, you requested some applause be put into the cast for you. I wonder if the producer will take time this week to put in a round of boos for you.
I deserve them. I definitely deserve them.
Sad Trombone. That's his nickname. That's Matt Hurley and the Magic that he didn't get to play this week. We hope you had a great week of cardboard, however you spent it in whatever format you played. Patreon news this week. The shipping is ready. If you are a Hard of Famer, start looking in the mailbox with eager anticipation because Brian has shipped out the playmats and we're going to have an announcement very soon, I believe next week's show, about how if you are not a Hard of Famer, you can pick up one of the exclusive playmats that we have for tryhards. It was just a run of 50, so these are going to be limited edition all the way through, and we'll tell you how you can get yours if you're not a Hard of Famer, coming up on next week's episode of Tryhards. Guys, that brings us up to the Tournament Magic this week. It was team events on both sides of the Pacific. GP Kyoto saw 757 teams. Yamamoto, Matsubara, and Takamura defeated Yotsumoto, Endo, and Takeishi to take down the title in Kyoto. These teams, Legacy, Modern, and Standard. In SCG Cincy, 341 teams. Bernal, Hoey, and Tenjum. Hoey and Tenjum, like, came out of retirement for this. Took down Rose, Regal, and Colgrove in the finals. And the next time your team goes somewhere and doesn't do well, I saw this in the final standings, guys, and I'll be honest, I thought of us. 341 teams registered, and they all played. But 25 of them went home with no points. If you go and you struggle, don't worry. Good teams have it happen to them on any given weekend. In the SCG Legacy Classic, it was 157 players. Daniel Dwan knocked off Adam Kozart 2-1. In Modern, they had 303. It was Brent Clift defeating Dylan Donegan 2-1. And in Standard, 141, Daniel Gillette was able to get past Julian John 2-0. Now, usually we talk about the decks that are played, but we're going to do that a little bit differently on this episode of Tryhards because of the nature of team tournaments. It's difficult to see what matchups were happening in which round and which deck actually defeated the other. So what we've done is taken the top eight from both Team GPs and from each SCG Classic and put them all into the hopper so we can determine a 20-deck metagame in each format. Now, 20, not 24, because GP Kyoto only listed the contents of the semifinalist and finalist decks, so we'll have just four in each format coming from Kyoto this weekend. Brian, let's start with the greatest format in Magic Legacy. The first place decks over the weekend, Grixis Delver, four-color Leovold Control, and Omnishow. Second place saw four-color Leovold, Turbo Depths, and Grixis Delver. Miracles, Grixis Delver, and Alurin had third-place finishes. Miracles, Elves, and Lands had fourth-place finishes. And then fifth through eighth was occupied by Grixis Delver, Grixis Delver, Grixis Delver, Mono Red Prison, Grixis Delver, Jeskai Miracles, Blue Red Delver, and Sneak and Show. Of those 20 decks, seven were Grixis Delver. Are we in a game where this is just the best deck against all comers? Because it's hard to predict what you're going to see with any frequency in the Legacy field.
It pains me to say it, and I used to play this deck. I could still pick it up pretty easily at a tournament if we would go to it, because it's a really fun deck to play. It's got a lot of play to it. You're never out of the game just because it can attack you on so many different axes. I think Grixis Delver is by far the best deck right now. The problem is it just beats up on each other moving forward. And so if you've got a good matchup against Grixis Delver with a different deck, I think that might be a better call, just so you can kind of skirt around it. You're going to see it if you go to a Legacy tournament. Grixis Delver is by far the highest played deck in Legacy tournaments right now. It's the best deck in Legacy tournaments right now. I'm waiting for someone to come up with sideboard options and other decks that beat it. I think the Mono Red Prison deck is a very, very wise choice because it can really just shut out a lot of the Grixis Delver greedy mana base, really kind of stifle that multi-axis that it wants to attack upon. So Turbo Depths, I was expecting to see more land style decks in all of these, but they just weren't there. And Miracle seems to be holding its own even after the banning of Top. I just feel like that deck is getting tuned. This was kind of fun. I like the four-color Leovold control deck, Hurley. They seem to kind of do what Grixis Delver is doing, just in a different color pie.
Yeah, that's exactly what the four-color Leovolds are doing. And honestly, unfortunately, Deathrite Shaman made it so that attacking a greedy mana base isn't really that much of an option. Wasteland obviously helps with the utility lands. Attacking that land base just doesn't do it anymore.
Matt, let me ask you about some of the suspicious entrants, in my mind, in this top 20. The ones that stand out. Turbo Depths, Alurin, Mono Red Prison. If you want to attack the game on a different axis, those decks stand out amongst the repetitive Grixis Delvers, Omnishow, Sneak and Show variants, and Miracles. Those three are really playing a different game.
Especially the Mono Red Prison. I mean, Brian, you brought that one up. They're almost like a glass cannon combo control aggro deck almost. I mean, it sounds weird to say it like that, but if you don't land that Chalice on one or pop the E-Bridge or get that Blood Moon down really soon, that really pitches a fit with your deck. And then Alurin is just a combo deck. You're going to have these decks that attack from a different axis, and you need them to attack these lands, but I think Deathrite Shaman is just so much of a resilient threat that it makes it really, really tough to do that unless you're going towards a different axis there.
It's interesting where Matt was taking this conversation to Deathrite Shaman. If you're going to try and innovate, or if you're just going to pick up a deck and play it, know who your enemies are. You're going to see them in decks redundantly. Make sure you have a plan for Deathrite Shaman. Make sure you have a plan for Snapcaster Mage. Make sure you have a plan for Young Pyromancer. These are linchpins that hold multiple different styles of play together, and you'll see them in a number of different decks. So while Legacy might not be predictable as to what deck you'll play, Right now, the format is predictable on what threats you'll see more often than not on the other side of the table. We'll see if anything comes along and shakes that up in the very near future. Guys, modern was the wild, wild modern as we're used to seeing. I was looking for a most played deck and I really couldn't find one in the 20. Maybe that's a sign of a healthy metagame. Maybe it's a sign of nobody knows what the hell they want to do. Either way, it makes for an exciting watch. Elves, Blue-Red Giftstorm, and Affinity all had first-place finishes in Modern this weekend. Humans, Affinity, and Burn picked up silver medals. Blue-Red Giftstorm, Blue-White Control, and Taking Turns all stood on the bronze podium level, with Blue-White Control, Jeskai Control, and Amulet Titan just off the podium in fourth. We saw Scapeshift, Boggles, Ad Nauseam, Jund, Grixis Death Shadow, and Humans elsewhere in that top 20 decks from Kyoto and Cincinnati over the weekend. Matt, Modern isn't even close to having a predictable metagame. Do you take anything away from seeing these results?
You said it. I mean, it is a wide open metagame. Bant Company's popping its head up again in 14th place.
Boggles not showing up in these. I was a little surprised. Boggles showed up in the Modern Classic. There was no Boggles in the Team Constructed, and it seemed like people were going more mid-range as opposed to aggro in the Team Constructed. The Blue-Red Giftstorm in first place by Matt Hoey was a little misleading because he just got absolutely wrecked in the finals by a burn deck, because just Blue-Red Giftstorm cannot win through a Eidolon of the Great Revel. I was surprised not to see Boggles, because I thought that would have been a great choice for a Team Constructed, because it has such good game against so many of these other decks here. Maybe with the exception of Jund, and there was only one Jund in the top eight of the Team Constructed. So it's interesting to see not just what different decks there are, but kind of where the metagame shifts, if it's more control, more mid-range, more aggro on a week-to-week basis. And Hurley, it's hard to prepare for Modern. I still really think you've just got to learn a deck inside and out, play it as well as you possibly can, and hope that you kind of skirt those, you know, 40-60 matchups, those 30-70 matchups, and, you know, play optimally in your other ones. So it's a tricky, tricky format. There's no question about that, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, I agree that you have to just learn a deck inside and out. I mean, that Ashiok deck that I played last week on stream, I mean, I have that, except for a couple of cards I'm just kind of picking up here and there. Got a couple of cards that I need to pick up for the Mardu smallpox as well. Brian, you're absolutely right. You just kind of have to hope that you don't hit your bad matchups.
Yeah, the deck that jumps out to me looking at these is the Mono Blue Taking Turns. Control decks that are a little bit dirtily, I don't think are great for the format if they take a while to win. But that's what I like about Taking Turns, is once it turns the corner, it slams the door in a hurry and doesn't leave anyone kind of sitting on the other side of the table, half alive, but mostly dead, and just wondering when their opponent's going to finish them off. So that Taking Turns list starting to intrigue me as I watch it grab a couple finishes here and there in Modern tournaments. Guys, in Standard, Mono Red was amongst the winners. Grixis Energy joined it, and Blue-Black Midrange. Whether it was midrange or control, Blue-Black seems to be in ascendancy in Standard in the moment. Green-Red Monsters had a second-place finish, along with Red-Black Aggro and Blue-Black Control. White-Black Vampires slid in third place, along with Esper Godpharaoh's Gifts and Red-Black Aggro. Big Red was in fourth, along with Blue-Black Control and Grixis Energy. And in the fifth through eighth places, we see Esper Approach, Mono White Approach, Mono Red Aggro, and a lot of blue-black combinations, along with one black-green snake deck. That's become the easy phrase for anything that's playing black-green with Winding Constrictor and using things that puts counters on your other permanents. It seems we're in a mature phase for Standard, and it seems like we're just sort of, Brian, riding out this last phase until the addition of Dominaria, which should give everybody a quick jolt of energy before rotation comes in the fall. Is there any reason to start innovating right now, or is it just time to sleeve up what you know is great if you have to play a Standard tournament in the next couple months?
Sleeve up what you know is great. I think it's also a format that's not nearly as one-sided as it once was. And I think we have to give a little bit of props to Wizards for taking some, you know, proactive action on this. The Standard metagame is pretty healthy at the moment, and you've got different styles of decks that can do well. But I think you just have to know your deck inside and out, know your matchups. The approach decks, that would be a bugaboo for certain aggro decks, if they just, you know, are getting their board wiped, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, can they come back from it? Usually not. The Drakehaven decks seem to have kind of fallen off, unless they're kind of using that as a alternate win condition for the approach decks. But I really do like the Winding Constrictor, the Snakes and Ladders, the Verdurous Gear Hulk with the Constrictor, the Ballista with the Constrictor. I feel like that is a really, really fun play style. So I enjoy watching that on camera. If the standard metagame was going to be around longer, I feel like I would invest in those cards and maybe sleeve that up. But right now, if someone told me, hey, you've got to come to this thing, I'd be like, well, if I can play that, I'll definitely go. Otherwise, I'm not going to put a whole lot of energy into trying to innovate standard at the moment.
Matt, I learned the hard way this week that when you flip Hottest Climb, it only costs 1 green and a blue to activate it. I thought it was 3 green and a blue to activate it. And yeah, I left myself open to a beaten and properly received it. Are you worried about learning what any of these cards actually do in standard ahead of Dominaria coming out? Or are we just sort of writing this out in its last moments?
You know, I heard somebody today, in fact, say, you know, standard's kind of blah right now. People aren't happy with it. Frankly, I don't understand why. Yes, there's, you know, 3 really expensive cards. I don't know where people are getting that, oh yeah, this is just a bad standard. Frankly, I don't see it. Do I want to learn what the cards do? Absolutely. I mean, I know what the cards do. Let's be real here. I'm excited for an up-and-coming format as soon as everything kind of changes and everything goes into rotation. I think that's going to be a lot healthier for the format as a whole, just to be able to kind of refresh itself, handle that everything that's been going down the last 18 months, 24 months with all the bans and everything. I mean, I'll be honest, a lot of people just forget that, hey, standards, you know, standards rotating here in a couple months.
I hope people don't look back and go, boy, I'm wistful for this standard environment because of what came before it with the bans. It was taken off of many of the major tour stops. So this particular standard iteration hasn't been that thoroughly investigated. Yes, we're at the end of a mature format, but I hope that people don't look back and say, wish we could have had more of that. There are standard environments that we all look back on and wish we could play a little bit more. I hope you got in as much as you like ahead of the Dominaria release. I hope you like the way we looked at the decks this week and the breakdowns from Kyoto, Cincinnati, and all the classics that SCG had in the Queen City over the weekend. Guys, that brings us up to this week's news. You know, if you're looking for something fresh, maybe a new weapon to take to your next tournament, you only need to look at the original emo Planeswalker for Magic, Jace. Of course, he's going to be first in line to get his own premium product, the new Spellbook series being released by Wizards. Jace's signature spellbook will be released June 15th, and it looks like it's going to have an MSRP of $19.95. For that, you'll get 8 premium cards, and one of them will be in a mythic foiling process. Okay, one of them's supposed to be extra super duper premium, according to Wizards. But you're going to get Jace Beleren, the original Jace Planeswalker, Blue Elemental Blast, Brainstorm, Counterspell, Gifts Ungiven, Mystical Tutor, Negate, and Threads of Disloyalty. I love the look of the new mana symbols. I love the look of the card frames on this, Matt. And I also love the art on Gifts Ungiven and Blue Elemental Blast. Is there going to be an overwhelming desire for this product? Or are we going to get that less than community desired foiling process that has submarined some previous premium releases?
So they did say premium foiling process, but if it is that from the vault foiling process, I think this could be a lot less desired. This is standard foiling. This will be a hot, hot commodity. And from what I understand, this is also going to be WPN stores as well, which bodes really well after kind of this fiasco of Masters 25 and Iconic Masters. All I got to say is, wow, these cards look gorgeous. I think they made a hell of a choice, too, with all the cards. I mean, obviously, everyone say, oh, you know what? Jace, the Mind Sculptor, is obviously the one that should have been in there. Well, yeah, but he's not the original. And can you really put a $100 product into a $19.99 sealed product? I don't think so. But yeah, I can't think of other cards that would be as, you know, as iconic, and they just look freaking awesome. Brian, what do you think about it? What's your thoughts?
I love the art. I love the cards that are chosen because it totally fits into the Jace spellbook idea, because any blue mage will tell you these are some really, really strong, synergistic, and completely just essential blue spells over the course of Magic's history. Having said that, 9 cards for $20, guys, you know, it's almost like we're getting that higher echelon. You know, we're the 1/10 of the 1% now. I can't imagine standard everyday Magic players going down to the store and picking this up and just being like, oh, I got 9 cards for $20. You know, they're going to be wanting to pick up dual decks and things that they can actually open and then play as a full deck. So part of me is I feel like I'm the audience for this. Sean's the audience for this. Matt's the audience for these cards. And yeah, I might pick one up, but I am still kind of like, for $20, I'm kind of like, eh, I have all these cards. So do I just want them in different format, or can I just kind of look at other people's copies and enjoy them that way?
You know who's not going to be picking this up, Brian? People who think Island should be banned. So I mean, it's, yeah, it's not exactly. really targeted at everyone. Very so we'll see how this ends up going. This is going to determine whether this series goes forth with regularity or becomes hit and miss. So I think they're anticipating, they being WotC and Renton, that this is going to be a big seller. And I think this would be a casual seller as well, because if you get these premium cards for $20, I think that's an easy way for people to pick up things that they may not have, or foils or so forth. I expect this to go very well for WotC. That's coming out again June 15th, Jace's signature spellbook, 1995. Matt, you and I have something in common. We have been waiting with bated breath for the release of the new Magic storyline on the Mothership. And I say you and I because Brian, the English teacher, was always ready with his digital red pen to swoop in, no matter who the author was or how many awards she has won prior to this, and sort of mark it up on his screen at home. You should see his computer screen. It's full of red ink at home. It's amazing that he can get anything done. The new series taking us to Dominaria, picking up at the end of the Gatewatch's interaction with Bolas at Hour of Devastation for most of the Planeswalkers in the line, debuted on the Mothership since we last spoke. Martha Wells is the new author, and she's kicking off a rotating list of premium authors that WotC has committed to bringing in to write Magic Story. So no longer just getting a turn for whoever's on staff at WotC to take their hand at this. Wells has a number of sci-fi award credits to her name. I'm not going to run through all of them now, but she is an established, well-documented, awarded author who has been a mass market success. And while I'm not going to go into the detail of the new story, I did read chapter one, and Matt, you can detect right off the bat a marked difference, and in my mind, improvement with what they're getting done now with Magic Story. Have you enjoyed it since the change?
Oh, my gosh. I think we were texting back and forth about this, if I remember right. So I think it's like going from a one of those like Scholastic books that, you know, Brian's probably sold $10 million of to a legitimate book. It's much better writing. It is amazing writing. And I hope that they do a better job of utilizing, of seeing an ROI from hiring Martha Wells and utilize her and do a better job of tying the story into the actual cards. The story spotlight things are kind of cool, but I think there should be all kinds of other things going on here. Super excited. I think this last week's one was pretty good. It gave away a lot of clues, and all I gotta say, without giving away too many spoilers, I can't wait to see the new weather light. That's all I gotta say.
All right, English teacher, you got your red pen ready?
You know what? All I want is for people to get better at their jobs, and Wizards got better at their jobs. This exactly was what I wanted to have happen. Staff writers are not designed to write fiction on a regular basis. As much as Wizards wanted that to happen, but to bring in somebody like Martha Wells to do this, you're absolutely right. It's absolutely phenomenal. This is exactly the kind of fiction and the prose narrative that this storyline needed. Anybody reading this is going to get sucked in because of the language, because of the storyline, the detail. There's so many different ways to approach this. So I am absolutely applauding Wizards for this change of direction. I will absolutely give them credit for when they do something right. And yes, I've been pretty harsh on their storylines in the past, but no, this is the stuff that I've been waiting for forever. The cringeworthy prose needed to stop. And I think Shirtless Jace was kind of like everybody's, you know,
worst nightmare.
That was the line in the sand that people were like, okay, I think we're done. can we do something else? And Wizard said, yes, we actually have it, and it's coming, and there it is, and they've delivered.
That's a whole different Nipplegate, one that we don't really even need to go into. Congratulations, Martha Wells. The first couple chapters have been outstanding. Looking forward to more on the Magic storyline, and I don't think I've ever said those words before, so that tells you what threshold she's been able to cross over. One thing that we're all eagerly anticipating is our arrival back on Magic's home plane of Dominaria. By now, you're familiar with some of the trappings that have gone along with Dominaria because of the leaks. We've avoided that here on the cast for a reason, but this week, we're going to get into it. Guys, first, some of the quick updates. Magic released a series of updates, whether it's rules or cosmetics, that we all know by now. The separator bar is coming back between text and the additional verbiage that you'll see at the bottom, flavor text, for the most part. That's just for your eye to easily read that card. Legendary cards are now going to have a little bit of a crown flourish at the top of their card frame so that you can more easily tell them apart from their non-legendary counterparts. The word add is going to replace your mana pool, since from the game's inception, it was just, I'm going to add black mana. Okay, you don't need to say to your mana pool, and that's going to free up some real estate on cards as well. Magic has changed link to the singular they from he or she. It'll also clear up some words on cards. And this spell will now be used if your spell has conditions. They give Talara's Battalion as the example of that. Cast this spell only if you cast another green spell this turn, rather than taking up the space to write out the usually longer than this spell name of the card. Now we get to the rules changes, the Planeswalker redirection rule. This is something that we have been working with in Magic functionally for quite some time. If your opponent has a Planeswalker on the board and you have a Lightning Bolt, or, okay, Lightning Strike, if you're not familiar with the primordial power of the actual Lightning Bolt, you might just say, bolt your Jace or bolt you and then move with your card, and that's fine. It's a fine shortcut. Everybody understands what you're doing, but the official rules now no longer have you saying bolt you, redirect it to Jace. You can choose the Planeswalker as a target. This is going to open up some design space, as Maru would say. Now they'll be able to design cards that say, do this or that to a Planeswalker, a creature, a player, and it can have several or none or some of those on its text rather than saying just any target all the time. So look forward to that as a functional change in the rules going forward. Those are the rules updates that we're getting with Dominaria coming out. Guys, I don't think any of those were really all that fundamentally groundbreaking, Brian, although clearing up the verbiage with targeting is something that's been overdue.
It needed to be changed. I'm glad they've cleaned it up. Dominaria seemed to be a great set to do that. Kudos to Wizards for staying vigilant on making everything just more efficient, to not make the game any more complicated, but to make it more efficient and free-flowing, and make gameplay then, therefore, the same, more efficient and free-flowing.
One thing that's going to be free-flowing again, FNM promos. Get ready to celebrate. You knew that you were done with those tokens, and now you get ready to collect some sweet promos. We know now what the promos will be with Dominaria coming up. The BioBox promo, Firesong and Sunspeaker, will be an exclusive. And while the art looks sweet, this is definitely templated to be a commander friend. Matt, other than that, we know that FNM promos are going to see Opt. Well, the art looks sweet on that. It looks like Opt is going to be the baseline blue manipulation and standard going forward, and I think I'm okay with that. Cast down an instant that this says destroy target non-legendary creature. This is going to take the place of Doomblade, is I think Black's go-to kill it spell. We see Shanna, Sisse's Legacy. That is going to be available when you participate in whether it's game day or a free-to-play day, and your store championship is going to have Steel Leaf Paladin along with the opportunity to win your champion mats. Matt, some of these promos, the Full Art Llanowar Elves for Open House looks awesome, and the Zephyrin Void from Magic League has a really cool look to its foil. And even Zadid, Djinn of the Lamp, unplayable in standard, really does look cool. Are there any of these promos that you're looking at on the financial spectrum, now that we know how we get them and what they're going to be with Dominaria soon to be released?
Maybe the Ops, just for, you know, Eternal Play. I think the Op being a promo already is another indicator that play design team is doing their job. And that's saying, you know, they recognize that Opt was going to be, I wouldn't necessarily call it a role player, but it's semi-heavily played within Modern. I mean, it's blue decks play a couple of Opts typically, more so towards the combo decks. Having the whole, the kind of the full art center Land War Elf, I like that on those some of those promos, they have them center oriented. Art in this set is just knocking it out of the park. I've got to say, when I first saw the scriptures, or I'm sorry, not the scriptures, the sagas, wasn't a fan when I first read about them. But then once they showed us the art, I think I'm a fan now. I got to say that.
I think you're skipping forward a little bit, but I'll let you get away with it because we were talking about cards that we're really anticipating. Speaking of sagas, let's start with a favorite of ours. I know it's a favorite of Brian and mine's, and Matt, I don't know if you were playing when this was happening. Kicker is coming back. Kicker is really easy to explain. Your card still has a converted mana cost that you pay to play that card. Kicker is just an upgrade. For instance, if our coconut drinking basic from the beginning of the show wanted to add a little bit of prestige to his glass, he might have Kicker pour that into a glass that doesn't say that you're a homeless person while you drink it. And you'd pay an extra, let's say, 50 cents for that. Kicker gives you an option to accelerate that spell or add something to it. It is always an optional cost. Brian, we played a lot with Kicker, and it's one of our favorite mechanics.
Kicker is so good. It gives you so many options, early game, late game. You can get a lot more value out of the card. It's a good from a design standpoint because it's got a mana cost, sure, but it's not going to be a dead card late game because if you can pay the Kicker cost much later, you get a lot more effects and a lot bigger effects down the line, and some of them can be quite amazing. So yeah, that's going to be a fun one to see what people do with Kicker going into Dominaria.
Matt, I know that you've played plenty of cubes, so you got to be familiar with Kicker. Do you have a good experience with it?
Oh, I'm familiar with it. I didn't play with it originally, but I'm very familiar with Kicker, and I've got to say, I think that it's probably one of the more well-designed mechanics within Magic. I just think it adds so much versatility to cards. I can't wait to be playing with it. I mean, being able to, you know, like this Sapperling Migration where you're just paying two for 2/1/1s, that's fine, that's acceptable, but then paying six for 4/1/1s, hey, if I've got the mana, why the hell not? I do love playing Kicker, and I think it's a great mechanic.
That was actually going to be the alternate name for Kicker. Matt just stumbled on it when Wizards designed it. Why the hell not mechanic? But they ended up going with Kicker, which I think was a lot easier to explain anyway. Even though Matt perfectly encapsulated the flavor of Kicker in my mind, why the hell not if you can do it? A couple of these are easy to wrap our heads around, and we don't need to get into a big conversation. There is now a historic category. This is simply going to be a new word used to refer to artifacts, legends, and sagas going forward. So if something is historic, it'll have the reminder text. It'll reference an artifact, a legend, or a saga going forward. Legendary, that is a new type that is being introduced in Dominaria. It must be played while you have a legendary permanent in play. Now remember, Dominaria is going to be the home to lots of legends. A legend in every pack. Willy Wonka would go crazy if there was a ticket in every pack, but we'll leave that aside for the moment. Knowing that Planeswalkers, Matt, are now legendary, we kind of saw this coming from Wizards. Legendary cards seem like they're going to be obvious from the jump, Matt. It is going to be a very powerful effect for what is usually an undercosted price. But because you're going to have to maintain a legendary permanent in play in order to just be eligible to cast them, I think that will be the throttle back on the power of these cards. I love this interaction that Wizards has built, and it gives itself an outlet to do some really powerful things.
I think it's a bit confusing on these like legendary cards that the historic portion is all artifacts and then just legendaries and sagas. But these legendary sorceries and stuff, Urza's Ruinous Blast, I just think that card looks amazing. It's 5 mana, exile all non-land permanents that aren't legendary. Yeah, I can't wait to be casting that card, let me tell you that much. And the art on that card too is just top notch. I just hope it's not confusing for any new players. And that's my big concern right now, is that new players might think, oh, it's legendary. I can only have one in my deck, or, you know, maybe this goes like that. I hope it's explained well. But yeah, I'm glad that they added this because I think it's super cool.
As someone who's kind of eschewed the spoiler season, except for a few of the cards that have been officially released on some level, I haven't delved that deeply into all of the new mechanics. And so I was first scratching my head about the historic and the legendary thing, because I was kind of like, wait, is legendary different than what I assume legendary is? Because if it is, then I need to go lie down and wake up and then have somebody explain it to me. I think it's going to be a lot easier than people realize that it's going to be. Having something that is historic is a little more confusing to me. All artifacts are historic for some reason. That doesn't seem right.
Maybe so I'm not the crazy one is what you're saying, because yeah. I thought that same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I'm trying to see what the benefit is for the game. I'm hoping it becomes clearer as things are revealed. But right now, I'm not seeing how that's going to be, as I said earlier, making the gameplay more efficient and more free-flowing. I feel like it might cause a little bit more pause and having to ask a judge or ask your opponent, because your opponent has done all the research and things. So historic is giving me more pause than it is than the legendary mechanic. I hope neither of them cause me pause at the pre-release.
So, Brian, you're telling me that artifacts being lumped in as historic is giving them sort of hexproof from common sense? Which leads us to our next topic, which is hexproof from. This is the reworking of protection. In the old days, in alpha, in beta, in unlimited and revised, yes, I understand. I was there. I saw it. I'll tell you about it sometime if you buy me a beer. This is simply the rewording of protection from. This creature or thing has hexproof from X. So let's say it's a white creature. It has hexproof from black. It can't be targeted by an ability, a spell, or whatever that is black. Brian, are you getting the same feel that I am, that Wizards is just trying to rework the old protection from because it was a bit clunky?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I can't think of a situation where it wouldn't work. And I think they've probably, you know, sat around some large oval tables while eating bagels and sipping some coffee and said, huh, why don't we just change it to hexproof? And everybody nodded and probably said, yep, sounds good. Let's do that.
Matt, save us from ourselves by talking about the one thing that you have been geeking out about from pre-release season, and that is Sagas. This is a new enchantment type. It's essentially an enchantment that has its own progression stapled to it. We were given a preview of this on the mothership when the leak happened. Now everybody seems to be on board, and even you've been won over by the reorganizing of the card frame in order to showcase these, and they look pretty sweet.
They do look sweet. I love that they commissioned special art for it, because I think without that special art, you would lose a lot of that effect. There's a lot of, I'm not going to call it build around me, I'm going to call it play around me abilities on these sagas. Stuff like, you know, the red one where like number one is just discard your hand. It's almost counterintuitive, but then you look at it and you're like, wow, that seems really powerful when I can just draw two cards. And if I can play that out late, or I can manipulate the tokens on this, or I can do this, or I can do that. So I am super excited for all of this nonsense going down. And it's going to be interesting to see if the sagas break out. And it's going to be, I think a lot of these mechanics that are running in here are not necessarily the mechanics, but a lot of these cards have potential to break out into other formats too. You're talking all artifacts are historic. Maybe some of these cards that historic permanents are required, maybe some of them break out into legacy or into other formats because artifacts are so common there. I don't know, but I just know that these cards are ridiculous and there's going to be some shakeups, especially with like Cast Down and these sagas once they're all. I'm not sure if all of them are spoiled at this point, if they're all going to be uncommon, mythic, but I know a couple of them were spoiled and I'm hoping that there's quite a few in the set.
I've always thought that enchantment has been the underexplored, underappreciated card type in the history of Magic. Yes, Wizard did some exploring of the space with Theros and the gods were enchantment creatures. I understand all that. Aura, which is a derivative enchantment type, gets a lot of love. But just enchantments, maybe it's because they have a sort of history stapled to them that says they're not powerful enough, and if you try to power them up too much, then you end up with humility, and nobody wants that to happen again. So we'll see where it goes. I'm hoping that sagas juice up really an underappreciated card type in Magic history, in my mind, the enchantment. Coming up, we'll be getting in the elevator very soon. Will Matt's pick have some informative purpose about anything we've just talked about, or will it purely be financial in nature? Find out about that coming up just after this. Guys, a revelation occurred since we last got together. Wizards dropped the NDA for everyone who's been invited into the Arena Beta. This is the next digital frontier for Magic the Gathering. It looks a little bit like, and I've been told, plays a little bit like Hearthstone. That's not a bad thing. That is a multi-million dollar enterprise, and Wizards would sure like to have some of that dough, to say nothing about their parent corporation in Hasbro. All of us have been playing in the beta at some stage or another. All of us have at least looked at it since the latest update. Matt, I know you've had some things to say about this. Now that the NDA has been dropped, what are your thoughts about where the beta sits right now? And we'll leave the metagame talk aside, because that's really not what the format is about.
I think there's still some improvements. I think they're going to, I'm not going to say they're going to have to hit their goal, and it's going to be tough to hit their goal, but I do think they have some serious improvements to make. I think being able to fly through these games of Magic, I think I made the comment to you guys, I played 12 or 14 matches in like 2 hours. I think that's a huge step in the right direction for the watchability of Magic and kind of the digital frontier of Magic. I do think they need to make sure the economy is balanced, because right now the economy is not balanced. I will definitely say also that they need to figure out the best way to do sideboarding, because I feel like once you hit three game matches, that's going to be a really kind of a tough thing to maintain this flow of the game and still have sideboarding. And I mean, you have to have sideboarding if you want this to be successful and to be like Magic at all.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think there are some things that I really enjoy. I love the new UI. It really feels good. It's slick. It's easy to use. It's intuitive when you get involved with it. So I think big props for that front. The new economy, though, too stingy. The previous version of the beta was very generous. This one, extremely stingy. They'll probably come down somewhere in between. And yes, in the beta, you can't just purchase cards. You'll certainly be able to give Wizards your money in exchange for digital objects. Going forward with this, when it becomes a in-production release, but so far in the beta, that is not something that we can do. And it's led to a skewed metagame, and we're not going to worry about that right now, because that's not what the beta is really about. You're participating in a feedback opportunity to make the game better for the community. That being said, I think that Wizards needs to be careful about one thing with this going forward. If they're really looking at the economy as it sits right now, it is far too much of a grind. And if you only want one deck to play, it's easy to do, to put together a top-end deck. But if you want to be able to jump between 3, 4, 5, 6 decks, make the new deck as it comes out, this economy is not one that's going to let you do that. So we'll see where they end up coming down on that in the future. Brian, I know you haven't had as much time to jump on since the wipe and the update, but what have you seen that you've liked about the beta? And what do you think they still need to work on?
Interaction-wise, I think it's absolutely phenomenal. Very, very user-friendly. There's some clicking that still seems to be a little too loose. I find myself misclicking, even though when I'm planning on clicking specifically what I want, it still happens. And I know some of my other compadres who I've talked to about this have said the same thing. So that is something that they have to address. I would say that the economy is probably the biggest issue, and something that is going to be addressed, I'm sure, by WotC in the future. You're never going to make anybody happy, especially Magic players. We're going to have to take, on some level, what happens. I just hope that it's not nearly as broken as it is right now, because you're right, Sean, stingy is a great word to use. If Wizards goes toward the middle on that economy, I think we're going to have a really good product and a really good way to bring new players into the game.
I do want to ask you guys one other question about this, and anybody who has played this will be able to understand what I'm talking about. Do you guys feel like there's a lot of wasted play area on the board? Like, it doesn't expand out wide enough, and there's a lot of play area on the sides that's just not used?
I've thought about this, and I'm going to give Wizards some credit right now. I want to say, in a best case scenario, that they designed this with streamers in mind so that you have areas to put your boxes in. You can plug in your pieces that the stream uses and not be overriding a critical piece of game information.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. I think it does have streamer written all over it, and it looks good. It really does look good. There's something to be said for the Modo, like playmat, cards. But there's a lot of very, very small text that streamers don't really care about if they know what they're looking for. But to someone who doesn't know what they're looking at, from a visual standpoint, I think the arena game is very, very sexy with the colors, with the graphics, and everything's a little bit bigger. And that's what you kind of want. You want the graphics to be at the forefront, not the mechanics. I think they've hit a home run with Arena on that.
We'll see where this goes from here. Matt, I will take umbrage with one thing you said. Got to have 2 out of 3 games. If you go to one game system, it enables some really broken angle shooting with the kinds of cards that you can use. So you have to, if it's going to be Magic as we know it, play 2 out of 3.
That's my biggest concern right now, is the 2 out of 3, because we're... I mean, you figure Q1 ending is ending next week. Okay, let's say 3 to 6 months away from an actual product that's being released to the public. That's not that much time to test a 3-game system, and there's a lot of ways that that can bug out.
I don't think that that's going to be a major problem. I really don't. In fact, I keep waiting going, I want a sideboard because this guy's angle shooting, and I know I can beat this because, of course, everyone's playing enchantment-based control because nobody can afford to play a ton of enchantment removal in their deck right now. So that's just one of those things that you get when you get a 1-game metagame, so to speak. Hope you get a chance to experience Arena. Give Wizards your feedback, because that's what we're doing as a community. We are a research group that is helping to develop a product to bring to market with Wizards. It's not a metagame you're trying to conquer. Don't get salty if things don't go your way. Give Wizards your feedback and ultimately make a better product for everyone going forward. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Let's go to the corner pocket and see what Matt has waiting for us in the elevator.
Trinisphere. This card has shot up over $40. This is a card that is just really, really easy to reprint. I say you should be selling these if you're not using them. Sell into the hype on these. These are those types of cards, they get reprinted, and it will be a $5 to $10 card. Sell these so that you have money for better cards within Legacy. But yeah, Trinisphere, not a key card right now by any means.
Trinisphere. Whether or not that'll be reprinted before or after Crucible of Worlds, who knows? Both obviously need a reprint. And if you want to hear some people get salty about Crucible of Worlds, just grab the pre and post show at tryhards.com on Patreon. You can find us there. Well, Brian, you've got something from Dominaria for us to think about going forward.
There's a lot of great cards from Dominaria that I could choose right now, but I'm going to kind of throw you a little softball until we get some more authentic spoilers coming down the pike. But I wanted to start with this one, guys, because I feel like this is something that is right in the wheelhouse of a lot of Legacy players. We're going to see this card in Standard, and does it have a place in a Standard metagame? Or what would you do with it, because it might have multi-format capabilities? We're looking at Danatha Capation Paragon. This is a legendary creature, Human Knight, 1 white and 2 colorless, First Strike, Vigilance, Lifelink. Aura and equipment spells you cast cost 1 less to cast, and it's a 2-2 body. Sean, Danatha Capation Paragon, is this a build-around card, or is this a card that's going to slot into another style of deck?
Boy, the first time that I saw this, I started reeling with possibilities. Let's see if I can come even close to a couple of reasonable ones. Boros Burn in Modern. I think this is going to be a card that's interesting. Yes, at a 2-body, you do open yourself up to the a burn and damage spell that all the decks seem to run out of the sideboard. But the fact that it is vigilant and lifelinking and first strike really gives them very few outs other than redirecting critical burn to it. And when you play against burn deck, there's kind of a mantra that says anytime they point a burn spell somewhere else, you've essentially gained that much life. So I think that Danatha is something that could come into the Boros Burn play right out of the gate.
I think that this is somewhat of a Standard powerhouse. I mean, why would they put this in if you didn't have enchantments and equipment to use on it? I mean, that just would make no sense, although they have done things like that in the past. If there's any decent equipment in here, I mean, if anybody tries to equip Captain's Hook, I might just slap them in the face. Maybe Dousing Dagger? I don't know.
I'm curious as to how this would slot in primarily in the Eternal formats of Modern and Legacy primarily, to see if Death and Taxes players would even want to touch this, because Thalia does what she does so well, and as her taxing effect is Danitha's costing one less to get your equipment down, to get your auras down. Is that going to be even better? Probably not. A 2-2 first strike vigilance and lifelinker, however, in the right matchup, I think is really, really attractive in that. What I think this is going to hinge upon, and Hurley, you hit it on the head, was what is the quality of equipment? We all know that there's cheap equipment in some of the Eternal formats, and then just choose the one you want. I think that's going to be the key. But she offers options, and that's why I like this card a lot. Danitha Capetian Paragon, I think, is going to have a place in Standard if we have the right equipment, and she'll find her way into the other formats because she is so powerful.
Danitha, this week's 3 minutes to brew here on Tryhards. Oh, this has already been a long episode. How do you know? The go-home lights are coming on, and we're not even done. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Great, actually, getting out and playing some Magic. Real paper Magic, of all things. Did some good trades. Somebody in my play group was really looking forward to putting together a Modern deck, and I said, hey, I'm your guy. So I brought a bunch of trade stuff to put together that Bant Nightfall deck. Traded some shocks, traded my Knights of the Reliquary for some really sweet stuff that he had, kind of off-the-wall stuff, signed stuff by artists, some full art things, just so he could actually get the cards that he wanted. I always am looking to enable people to play the formats that they want to do, and even if I'm not looking to trade specific cards, sure, if it gets somebody up to doing that, that's exactly what I want. And so if we can get another player into the Modern metagame, Zach, you're coming down to the shop next time Modern's firing with that Bant Nightfall deck. So I was the enabler this week to get him into Modern. So another one under my belt.
What I did to get better at Magic this week, I ignored Matt's advice. I was going through the new beta allotment in Arena as I didn't have time to actually play physical cards this weekend because of the funeral and visitation. And I asked both of you guys, hey, what should I do with this mythic wild card that I opened? And Matt said, save it. And since I ended the last beta wipe with 9 mythics and 6 rares in my account, I did the opposite. I spent my money right now. Breaking news, Scarab God, still good. That's what I've got to say for myself. And I'm okay with using it on that. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
I didn't play Magic, but I got to hang out with the this super casual player again. And I think this is like second or third weekend in a row. But every time I hang out with him, he just has such a different view on the game. And I just kind of scratch my head and go, huh, that does make sense. I remember that. It was a mentally exhausted week or weekend, and so I didn't play any Magic, and it kind of let me recharge my batteries. But now I'm looking, there's a couple of local tournaments in the next couple of weeks that maybe I'm going to go Eldrazi some people out with Ashiok and Modern. I'm not sure yet, but we'll find out soon.
Oh, you brave soul. Congratulations for making your ears happy again this week. We'll catch you next week here on Tryhards.